I just get started. Okay, I've got 4:45, so let's get started. Welcome to this session on resentment, and specifically the fourth step. Also in there, in some of the literature, it mentions eighth and tenth step, but that was an early discussion. Just drop it. My name is Kirby, and I am a sexaholic. Hello. If you're wondering if you're a sexaholic or if you don't know what a sexaholic might be or look at, just take a good look at me. I'm it. I'm there. You know, it's taken a long time for me to say that. But I think you can relate. Anyway. In the spirit of the fifth tradition, to carry the message, this session will be recorded. In the spirit of the fifth tradition, to carry the message, this session will be recorded. The recorder will not be turned off during the session. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may participate by listening or attend another session. We ask that those of you who choose to share step up to the microphone, if we have time for that, so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. So, and please don't tamper with the equipment. Will you please join me in opening the session with a serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. All right. I just have to share that one of my modus operandi is being invisible and hearing myself on this microphone and these speakers. I am not invisible. And this really just goes against the grain, you know, what I consider my survival technique. So bear with me if I'm just a little nervous, you know. Now listen, as far as anger and resentment, I mean, just anger itself, I mean, you're not going to find a corner of the world where it doesn't exist. You know, animals seem to get angry, you know, whatever. I mean, it has a purpose. Just as much as, you know, your stove has a purpose. You know, you're going to cook a meal. That same fire can burn down your house, maim you, destroy you. You know, but there is a purpose, and when the purpose is over, you turn it off. I can think of one clear instance when that happened to me in my life. I woke up on a camping trip. I was freezing cold. I got angry, and that anger got me up out of my sleeping bag. It got into some Long Johnson, blah, 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 and I got warm. And then as soon as I was warm, the anger was gone. And that is, that's an appropriate use. That anger or emotion, which is energy in motion, is to, you've got to accomplish something. Something needs to be done. Now, let's talk about resentment, though. And the word resentment, you have the Latin re, which means again, and the French sentiment, which are feelings. So, again, feelings. And with that definition, resentment does not necessarily mean anger. It can be anything. And that was a surprise to me. You know, when I just go over euphoric feelings, you know, is that a resentment? Typically, though, we do save resentments for anger as a definition, just because the anger is so destructive. So why this anger again and again and again and again and again? I had heard of forgiveness, you know, throughout my life, and I thought it was a really nice concept, an admirable. And that those who were into that sort of thing, you know, my hat's off to them, but there's some sons of bitches out there, let me tell you. And don't get me started. You know the whole story. So what am I going to do? I am angry. And if I went through my personal inventory, my life, you know, when I went and sat down to the fourth step and somebody said, you know, you've got some things to be angry about, and some things actually did happen to you that you have a right to be angry about, and that's true. But how do you forgive, you know? How do I stop being angry? Because this resentment, feeling again, and this feeling again just is a fuel. You know, it's just a stinking fire, you know, smoky. It's just, and I couldn't quit it. And I remember with my wife, I don't know how anybody could, you know, just the feelings I had towards her, I don't know how anybody could be around me. And it got to the point where I was exhausted from being angry and resentful. And I literally couldn't take that any longer. And I said, God, I hope my wife has absolutely the best day possible. And the next time I saw her later that day, she was a completely different person. She changed immediately. And I wasn't sure quite how that worked. And this was right around the time I was working my fourth step. And in the fourth step, I was instructed, think about the worst moment you ever, you know, the worst thing you ever did. And then you think about your anger towards this person. And you want to ask God to help you realize, make it real that that person is also sick. And then ask God for the forgiveness you need for your anger towards that person. I'm not asking God help me forgive that person. Because, you know, I can't forgive them because I don't have forgiveness. I am not the font of forgiveness. It doesn't come from me. I need to receive it. And when it comes into me, you will not be able to stop it. Once you really have said, God, please bring the forgiveness into me for my anger for this person. And something happened that never happened before. And that was, I was okay with people. You know, I was okay with people. I was okay with my father. My father, who I wouldn't, you know, just not even going to go into words, but, you know, we had a rough time of it, Dad and I. And I listened to his family stories. Well, he and his father had the same, if not worse. And so, and he, my blessed soul, you know, just he did not get past that anger. And he was so upset with the father and how his father had behaved. And even my mom, I mean, this is decades before I went into any kind of recovery or anything. You know, he's so mad about his dad, but I'm telling you, he's doing the same things his father did. So, this anger and resentment, again, feelings, will tie you to this person, place, thing, in a way that you know, there's no letting go, because the again feeling is the tie. Now, let's see, how did I put it here? Yes, emotional resolve is a need. You know, like air, water. You've got these feelings going through your whole body. You've got a nervous system. It is designed to feel. In fact, the people who can't feel are in trouble. You know, like the disease leprosy. You lose your feeling. You bump your hands and you damage yourself. So you are designed to feel. So you're going to resolve your feelings one way or another. Whether you squish it down, hide it, medicate it, actually express it and resolve it, the feeling has no judgment on that. You know, that is The feeling does not have the capability to make a judgment as to how it is handled. It's incapable. So, you know, I had heard about this forgiveness, but when I tell you, when my grand sponsor, you know, said that, receive the forgiveness, it was like, holy smokes. No one had said that before. No one had said that. And it worked. I mean, it really worked. And you can, of course, in the fourth step, and again later on in the 10th step, you know, we use these, you know, these principles in all of our affairs. Throughout the day, I will ask, you know, please give me the forgiveness for. And it's that getting tied in. Let me just leave some of my notes here. Now, the other part of the fourth step is when you do your fear inventory. Now, again, these are feelings. So, again, feelings, resentment. And I just didn't see the connection. You know, anger, fear, why are we doing this? You know, why don't we have 13? Oh, there is a 13th step. Okay, right. So, you know, why? You know, I just didn't get it. And I did a really thorough fourth step. I mean, I wrote down all my angers, and I want to receive it. God, I'm asking for the forgiveness for my anger. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, it worked, but it was like going so far. It was like I got to a place where it wasn't going any further. And there were a couple of things I missed. You know, I was willing to forgive people. I did not consider myself a person. You know, I'll forgive, and I'm willing to ask for the forgiveness for everybody except for one son of a bitch. You know, and that was me. And I was really, in fact, my sponsor said, did you pray for any anger for you have here? I said, yes! Of course I did. I'm angry at myself. What do you think? You know, I just, and really just ruffled my feathers, you know. And it was about 6 months later that I went, I think you really don't like me, you know. And so I started to do that on myself, and then I started to make a little more progress. It started to expand. There was like some more room. And then the fear. Now, let's say I'm afraid of my boss. Cranky. I want to say something. I say, you know, we got to order this part, and you're going blah blah blah, you know, budget and things like that. And so I'm scared to tell him. Now, feelings are funny. You know, they're kind of squirrely. They'll scoot around. So I feel paralyzed with this fear, and I'm praying on this fear, and nothing's happening, and I'm still having this fear. And that part's still broken, and it hasn't been ordered. And I'm not saying anything. And soon, one of the guys is coming in, do you have my part? I thought you ordered that 4 days ago. You know, no, but you were out of money. You know, so I've got myself into this little thing, and it's fear. And what happened, seeing as how years of medicating, I didn't notice that I was angry at the perception that I couldn't say what I needed to say. Somebody's cranky. I'm going to keep the peace. I'm not going to say anything. And I was so far away from my anger about not being able to speak up, about being pissed off about it. I had to go away from it. But that energy was still there, and it came out as fear. I was afraid of it. My God, there's no telling what's going to happen. He's going to pull a gun on me. He's going to literally bite me. He's going to call my wife and and, you know, say you caught me sleeping or something, you know, anything. So if I don't go from that fear and connect it to that anger, I can never ask for the forgiveness for the anger, and I will not resolve those feelings, and again, feelings, resentment. And it stays in this nice, tidy little loop. You go rup, and rup, and rup, and rup. And with me, I'm sure with other people, that little rup, rup, was picking up speed, like rup, 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 and burning me out. Burning me out. I mean, when I tell you that... I can't not tell you how many calories I burnt just being mad. You know, just being mad. As if I'd never done anything wrong. You know, I do not have a felony conviction because I'm lucky. Just that. And I was in a group with these other guys. And I'm the only one there that the court didn't say, you got to be there. You know, I kind of shoehorned in. And he looked at me and said, do you feel like you didn't do anything, or do you feel lucky? And I realized, no, I don't feel lucky. I feel like I didn't do anything. And I realized I was really lucky. But that's getting off the point. But I was so angry, you know. And but then when I got that fear bit, I'm afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm mad. I'm mad because I can't say to my wife, I need $10 for a haircut. Do we have $10? Can I get a haircut? And that took that fourth step again and just spread it out. And it turns out that these angers and these feelings will turn and flip for one another to allow you to maintain whatever poise you have. And for me, the poise was, you know, of course, avoidance, non-confrontational, I'll be wrong, let's get along, you know. And, you know, I can't vilify my wife because she said to me, you know, I said, I need some money for a haircut. She said, oh. Thank you for asking for what you needed. And I mean, I was just, really? You never ask me for anything, and you say yes to my everything. You know, can you please ask for something? It's like, you know. And so, let me see. That's pretty much the crux of it. It's pretty simple, you know. And it's actually surprising that it's that simple. And we can break it down just a little bit, you know, when you look at the fourth step. And I'll kind of write to keep track of what I'm saying. And I'm sure, you know, I'm using mostly the AA model because that's the one that was presented to me out of the AA big book, so... When dealing with the anger towards another person, worst thing I ever did, realize the other person is also wounded or sick. And when I say realize, you want to have real eyes. It's two words. You want to realize. Make it real. Don't just say, oh yeah, I know that. Realize the other person is sick. Ask for the forgiveness that I need for my anger towards this person. And the reason I'm saying this slowly is because linguistically, the words are very important. And I'm not saying, God, help me forgive this person. That is not it. Because then we're saying, I'm forgiving. You know, God, I need the forgiveness for my anger towards this person. Give me the forgiveness I need for my anger towards this person. And maybe it sounds a little selfish, but that's the way it gets into you when you're specific. And God's a little funny. God's very polite. God will not go where God is not asked. He's just a little picky that way. And so, darn it, you know, I was in AA for 15 years. And I never got any of this because I wasn't asking for it particularly as it applied to my sexual addiction. So ask for that. Give me the forgiveness I need for my anger. Then, when you've done that, if you can look at this person with the same tolerance, patience, and pity that you can a sick friend, and this person may have run over your dog. There's stories of a sergeant of a platoon who actually shot in battle. One of the soldiers called friendly fire, and they tried to cover it up. And this is an AA story, and the father had to pray for this sergeant and actually met him and said, you know, I'm sorry that you're having to go through this. So, you know, you can do it. You can ask for the forgiveness for your anger. Okay, so you've gotten that part. Now let's go on to this fear. And for me, it was always so squirrely. It sounds funny, but I was afraid of fear. But that key of what is it I'm still angry about that I'm not doing this step to resolve my anger. And boy, I tell you, that fear just goes. The fear becomes a non-issue. I could go into some, you know, more stories or examples, and, you know, I've got an hour, but then when it gets down to it, and like when it dawned on me, it's just that simple. It is. And I think, because all I'm going to do is repeat myself again, which I think I've done twice now, I'm going to open it up if anybody has any questions or any comments they'd like to make. Right there, yeah. Yeah, come up to the mic.
My name is Jerry from Jacksonville.
Hi, Jerry.
And I have found in life that there's a spectrum. There's three positions I can take in regard to my fellow man. At one end is wimp doormat, in which I let him usurp all the rights around. At the other extreme is aggressive. He usurps everybody's rights around him. In the middle is assertive. I want my rights and nobody else's rights. And when I get resentful, it's because I should have stood up for my rights, but I didn't. And it's really an anger which I know is directed at me, but I'm not facing that. I'm angry at myself because I didn't stand up for myself. So I've externalized it on this other person, and I resent that person. So the way out of this bind is what, back in Chicago when I lived there, we used to call the sandwich. I know I need to confront. Maybe confront isn't even the right word. Maybe it doesn't have to be confrontive, but I know I need to talk to this person. So I call someone in the program, and I tell them that. I need to talk to so-and-so right now. I want you to be praying for me. I'm going to call this person or see this person and say what I need to say, and then I'm going to call you back to report that I did this. And I can assure you, I've made sponsees do this, and I do it myself. It works. There's no resentment. I mean, it just feels serene.
Thank you.
I'm Jerry from New Jersey, okay?
Jerry.
This isn't planned, but when I resent, and I do very well resenting, you know, they say in AA, all you need to have to start a new meeting is a resentment in a coffee pot. And the coffee pot isn't necessary. But the resentment's really, and I've seen meetings that have broken up and turned into really good meetings, but they did it because of resentment, so it's not all bad. But if I'm resenting you, I'm giving you free rent in my head, because I'm thinking about you all the time, you know? And the other thing, too, is you're probably having a good day. I don't want to pick on you all the time. Whereas I am not. My stomach is, you know, really upset. And the other thing, too, is if I play back the scene, I always win, you know, because I'm judge and jury. And but it doesn't do any good. So with resentment, I really, as our speaker said, you know, have to refuel it. But I like that idea of asking God to give me the forgiveness to give to you. And maybe ask that you will have enough forgiveness to give to me, too. The other thing, too, is I had someone working for me, and after 8 years, she left, and she was really very angry. And I didn't know why. And then I got very angry and resentful. And my sponsor at the time, who happened to be Jess, said, you can't live with this. So he said, every time you think about her, every time her thought comes, you know, you get the thought about her, every time you talk about her, you have to stop and pray that she will have everything that you want today. Health, happiness, a good day, friendship, everything. And he kept me to it. If you knew Jess, he really was a hard sponsor. He was a loving sponsor. But he kept me to it. And he, you know, it was for 6 months. And, you know, it really hurt. But it really helped a great deal, too. And after 6 months, he said, okay, I hear something different in your voice. So why don't you write to her? Very, very general, just to begin to reestablish communication, you know? And then that was wonderful. And so it was just reestablished. And then last year, the therapist I had, when I told him about this, said, you know, what you did was fine, but there's something more you have to do. So I paid for her to come up from where she was working, and we spent some time together and just went through my feelings and what had happened and why I did it and so on and so forth. And then she had a chance, which is another grace from God, another miracle, to say, well, she had a share in it too. So there was not just for me was the reconciliation, but for her. And I really do like that, that there's usually another step, which I resist, but which really, and it worked out very well. In fact, she comes from Nashville, which is not living here, but I called her as we came into the state to tell her I would be in Nashville. So we've gotten to that point again where there's, you know, there is a real friendship. And that, as they say, is a miracle of the program. Thanks.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Hi, I'm Sam, sexaholic.
Hey, Sam.
And what I found coming into this recovery program and getting a little bit of sobriety and getting away from my sexual acting out was resentment was number two, you know, on the list. And sometimes I just feel like, you know, I should you know, introduce myself as a, like, resentaholic, you know, because I just wake up in the morning and start manufacturing them like it's a factory, you know. I mean, I stand in the shower and they're running through my list, taking over my head, you know, and they're about to control my whole day, you know. And I've done that pretty much every day of my life. And so working with my sponsor, I said, you know, what can I do about this? It's really driving me crazy, you know, and I'm here to get sober and I want to be sane. And he said, well, you know, resentment can't live alongside gratitude. So why don't you start making these gratitude lists? So that's what I do in the shower every morning. I have a mirror or a piece of glass that fogs up, and I write down all the things I'm grateful for. When I fill the glass up, that's my signal to get out of the shower and get to work, you know. And it makes my day so much more easy, you know. It's like I don't have to fight all the time, you know. And that's it's exhausting. That resentment has so much energy to it. It's all negative, and it just poisons everybody around me, and it gets worse, and it's like snowballs, and there's never a solution in it. But as soon as I go to a gratitude, I find that it's impossible to resent that person or that situation. Just recently, I just had an incident with my boss. He sent me an email pointing out my defects, character defects, and automatically had a resentment about it. He said I was procrastinating over a project, you know. I went into my head, and I'm, you know, throwing darts at them. I'm, you know, building this resentment. My sponsor says, don't respond back to them, you know. Give it 24 hours, talk to your wife, talk to your family, talk to some other people in the group, and let's talk about it tomorrow. So I did, and I reread the email from him, and I was like, you know what? He makes a lot of sense, you know. He just called me on, you know, what I was struggling with. I was really procrastinating over this project because I'm fearful. And so now today I've got a lot of gratitude because the same night my son comes to me and says, you know, my New Year's resolution is procrastination. And he's 10 years old, you know. And I'm like, so we had this great conversation about procrastination, and I think he helped me out more than I helped him out. And then I had to, that night I prayed for my boss and thanked him for the email, you know, so it's, you know, just a lot of gratitude, just turn that all around. So appreciate the topic. Thanks.
Thanks, Sam.
My name is Anthony. I'm a sexaholic. Just have a couple of things to say on resentment. I have a lot of resentment towards my younger and only brother. And I suppose deep down for me, it's because I'm hurting that he has somebody else in his life, i.e. his wife, who's his number one priority now. And I really enjoyed your share. I've read, I was going to say hundreds, but at least 100 self-help books on patience and resentment and anger, and do I have to give up me to be loved by you, and all these type of titles that I was always trying to figure me out. And that was always because I wanted to be in control, because I wanted to figure it out, because my ego and pride wanted me to be independent, to be the boss, and to be clever and smart. And if I could figure me out, then I could control me, and I could control other people, and then I could be happy. But it was only through recovery, and I'm working through the steps, thank God, with a sponsor. He's taken me through the steps, that that I can go on my knees and ask for that grace that you spoke about, for the grace to forgive my anger. And I'm so grateful to have heard that today, because I was praying for the grace for forgiveness so that I could forgive, and that I would be a great fella, and that I would deserve all the rewards as a result of me forgiving, whereas it's actually me that needs to ask for the grace for forgiveness for my anger. And it came to mind that over Christmas I did do that. One morning I went down on my knees, and I had, and not alone had I resentment towards my brother, but that meant I had resentment towards his wife. And that meant I had resentment towards their nine-month-old child. And it meant that I wanted to play with my sister's nine-month-old child much more than I did with his nine-month-old child. You know, and it's not the child's fault. And I felt so guilty about that. And I have to, I'm told that in recovery that I have to practice the actions of love. That while I ask God for the grace, that he will not come in and just remove my defects like that, that it's up to me to practice kindness, tolerance, patience, love. So it took quite a leveling of my pride, as selfish and all as that may sound, or egotistical, to actually go down the stairs, go on my knees, and play with the child, and smile, and even talk to the parents, i.e. my brother and his wife, through the child, you know, just to say, listen, I hope you're quiet whenever they're on their way back to Dublin, so that they'll have a nice journey, you know. And really that was the things I wanted to say to them that I wasn't able to say to them, because deep down I was hurting. And usually I find when I'm angry, I'm hurting in some way or other, and I'm too proud or too afraid to speak up for my needs and say, you know, to my brother that I love you and I hate the fact that you have to prioritize your wife, but that's just the way life is. And I also realize too that in some cases that is just the way life is, and that I have to, as well as ask God for the grace to forgive my anger, is to place all my reliance and trust in God, of my understanding, because that's life. And I never felt those feelings for years. I didn't feel the hate and the anger and the resentment and the pain, and because I ran away from it. I acted out from it. And those are the things I've been running from for, I'm sure, since 4, 5, 6 years of age, or whenever I started acting out. And I'll just finish on that to say that, or two things to say, that it's important for me to remember to have a bit of gentleness and compassion for myself, because I did start acting out from a very young age, and I was a child, and I wouldn't give out to a child today for acting out. So it's important I don't give out to me either. And I'll just finish on this, and I didn't say it at the last meeting, that about acceptance, you know, yesterday my flight from Dublin to Chicago was delayed by 2 hours, and it meant I was going to miss the connecting flight to Nashville. So I was a bit annoyed, and so I said, okay, I'll take the action. And I was saying, why did I not read that book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, Susan Jeffers, you know? But that was because I wanted to be in control and could figure it out, and rang the travel agent or the insurance company. And then they said, yeah, it'll be covered. If, you know, if you miss your flight, that'll be covered. And, well, how much will it be covered? Can I get a first class flight? What kind of hotel can I stay in? And he read through the small print, and, you know, he said, well, there's a bit of ambiguity around that. And I said, yeah. Mm-hmm. In my head, I said, yeah, typical. There's always ambiguity. So I had a bit of resentment towards large organizations, institutions, airlines, insurance companies, my former employers, and anybody that is wealthy and has a lot of money, because, you know, it's just not fair. And poor me and poor me and poor me and poor me another drink, and or I'll act out. And so I have to be, well, that's somewhat funny. That's just a snapshot of the way I can live my life on a daily basis, or like the gentleman shared earlier on about the registration not being right. So I got to Chicago, and we were in about 5 o'clock, and my flight was due to go at 25 to 7 to Nashville. And we got through. The people were very slow getting off the plane, because they weren't getting off quick enough for me, and, you know, how dare they. And eventually when they got off, the luggage was 40 minutes coming off the plane, and this was the difference of me making the flight and not making the flight. And I was getting angry, so there was a representative there, and I said to him, you know, what's the delay? And he said something to do with the cart had flipped over. And and I said, I know I'm powerless, but I want to get angry. I just so want to get angry, because this will deal with the fact that I'm afraid that I won't get to Nashville, and I'm afraid that I'll have to spend money that I haven't got. And, you know, I knew all this at a logical level, and I was trying to say my prayers, but I was saying, I don't really want to say these prayers. I don't want to say these prayers, because I'm so used to being angry, because it, I was going to say it works for me. It doesn't work for me, but it's what I'm familiar with. And eventually it was quite late, and one guy says, no, you definitely won't get the flight. And he worked with United Airlines, and the other lady said, yeah, you just might make it. And so I ran through the airport and through the security and got the flight the last minute, and sat on the flight and said, all right, here I go again, Lord. You know, I had no trust, no faith. And it didn't matter if I didn't get there, because I would have got there at some stage. And arrived in Nashville and went up to the, was waiting for the luggage to come out, and of course my bag never arrived. So At that stage, I just smiled and I said, oh, you know, I could go for another resentment here, but, you know, I'm here this far. Hopped in the taxi, and the guy in the taxi said, I'll definitely finish this. I know I'm going on, but the guy in the taxi said, so where are you going to? And I said, I'm going to the Sheraton. And you could see his reaction. He was going, you're going where? He says, don't you know there's a shuttle bus? And I said, oh, I'm sorry. And I was sorry, like, because I know what it's like for a taxi driver to queue at an airport. And I said, can I not just hop out? And he said, no, the guy won't let me hop out now because I have to have taken my fare now. And we had a conversation for the 15 minutes about how difficult life can be sometimes, that the things that we want, that I want to work out, and the expectations I have that everything should fall into place and be as I want them to be, aren't always that way. And that was nice, because I was able to connect to them at some level of intimacy about how he felt, how I felt, and just accept that I need a program, like as much as I need air and water, because I can't survive without it. And I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, my name's Larry. I'm grateful to be a sexaholic.
Larry.
I use lots of methods to get rid of resentments, but one of them is to see my own fault in it. And wouldn't you know it, but of course, the best people to do a amends with are people in the program, because they understand. This friend of mine and I were driving back from a meeting, and we got into politics, not a good topic for us. And he got angry, I got angry, and the level kept escalating for both of us. And I got out of his car and went to my car. And then I just didn't feel right. But, you know, I was right because of my political views, you know. I'm sure he felt the same way. Then the next day I thought about it and I said, you know, what are you, crazy? I mean, are you stupid? You're going to waste a good friendship over some political argument? And when I realized that, it was so easy to say, you know, I'm sorry. I value our friendship more than I do any political argument, win, lose, or draw. And he, being in the program, was very generous also and essentially said the same thing. So a lot of times, if I can see my wrong in it, then it's easy to give up the resentment. If I'm still right and I'm winning in that, you know, in my head, in court, no way am I going to apologize and mean it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Eric.
Hi, my name is Matt, and I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic.
Hi, Matt.
I'm also a Philadelphia sports fan, so I have about 25 years worth of resentments, which just recently got resolved a little bit with the Philadelphia Phillies winning the World Series. And I mention that because I have resentment toward my wife right now because, you know, I'm a big Eagles fan, and about the playoffs, about her not taping the game for me, not DVRing it. And I'm not talking about last week's game. I'm talking about the game that's coming up on Sunday. And I know it hasn't happened yet, but I also left and didn't ask her to tape it. But I know she's going to forget. And I'm resentful for her because I know the flight's not going to get in on time. And I laugh about that, but for my whole marriage, she'd ask me, what do you want for dinner? I wouldn't tell her what I wanted for dinner. You know, and then I'd be resentful because she didn't make lasagna or the chicken and dumplings. And I've shared this story before, you know. But I really appreciate this meeting today because, first of all, I do know that I have to ask for what I want. And I'm getting better in my recovery for asking what I want. But it wasn't until this meeting that I really realized that, you know, and I thank you, Kirby, for chairing the meeting and saying this. Because I realized ultimately it's, you know, it's about my fears about asking her for what I want, because for some reason I'm going to ask her for what she wants, and it's going to, growing up as a, you know, my mother is an adult child of an alcoholic, you know, don't cause any problems. So I figure everything's going to be a problem. If I ask for something, I don't want to ruffle any feathers. So I realize that ultimately, you know, I'm resentful, I'm angry with myself for, you know, not having, you know, the nerve to ask for something that I want. And that's something that I have to resolve. And I'm just starting to learn how to do that right now. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Matt.
I'm Tim, recovering sex addict. Two things I've learned about resentments is one, that when I am having the negative thoughts, that I have to replace those with positive thoughts. I can't merely just surrender them and then walk away from them. I have to either, you know, pray for the person or, you know, think positively, whether it be prayers or meditations. Secondly, I was reminded that of the four-step prayer, which the important line in the four-step prayer that when I'm resenting, I hate is, how can I be helpful to this person? And when I'm resenting someone, that's the last thing that I want to do, is take an action of love to improve my relations with that person. But when I do have the willingness to do that, or pray for the willingness to do that, it helps to clear that resentment. Thanks.
Okay. Did you want... All right, just another share, and then I'll do a wrap-up. Sure.
Hi, I'm Tim. I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic.
Hey, Tim.
And, I just... what immediately comes to my mind is many years ago, I came across this exercise to do if you are working with somebody that's really difficult, you just... simply pray for them and hold them in the light and, you know, think good things about them. And I was having a really difficult time with the person I was working with. And so I tried this, and he turned into a different person. So I kind of realized that it worked. But then I went on and not made sure I didn't do that again, because I'd have to, you know, change my life and my perceptions of things, and maybe I couldn't keep on saying that life is unfair and people are mean to me and I'm no longer be entitled. So it's really takes a lot of work for me to let go of my resentments and my anger, so that I can kind of shift my idea of what the world around me is like, that it's not out there, it's within me, that I can shift and let go of these resentments and actually let people change around me. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. All right, we've got a few minutes left. Thank you for coming up and sharing your experience, strength, and hope on resentment. I hope that what I've said, that some key pieces are helpful. These are some things that have worked for me. I just kind of to recap the specific, you know, I'll stress it again, you know, God give me the forgiveness I need for my anger towards, you know, and you fill in the blank. That is the path, the way it comes through. A couple of other things, you know, it's like, one of the, you know, like with my wife, hoping that she has a good day, asking God to give somebody a good day, well, God knows what kind of day somebody needs, you know. And if they're having a good day, you know, it's not my credit. So, and it, again, this being specific and in a focused manner, you know, God, I hope this person has the best day possible. You're wishing well for them. God's going to decide what kind of day they have. But, oh, it's awfully nice of you to wish that they're having a good one. You know, the it's much more effective. My experience with the steps came into AA in 1991. Got the big book at a meeting, you know, take it, I'm the winner. I read it in a week. I didn't think it was that well written. And I was like, you know, okay. And I quit drinking. I didn't even quit drinking. I was like, I quit drinking the day before. You know, I had a good old-fashioned Lockhorn with the family. And I realized that, well, the beer I had last night was my last drink. Because the argument we had, I was accused of being an alcoholic and having alcoholic delusions. So, well, you know, I'll, I'll cop to being an alcoholic. And I just said to myself, I'm never having another drink so long as I live, so help me God. I don't care what it takes. I went to AA, you know. And then talked to my therapist. Oh, you know, yeah, I quit drinking. Oh, no, it's great. Funny thing, though. She said, what? Oh, yeah, just, I don't know. I was masturbating a lot. She's like, well, yeah, well, how many times? Like, oh, I don't know, like 9 to 12 times. And she goes, a week? A day. She's like, you're masturbating 9 to 12 times a day? Well, I didn't yesterday. I mean, I took a nap. You know, it's the weekend. I slept most of the day. So she handed me this pamphlet. It was to Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. So I went, hey, I quit drinking. I didn't realize I was going to quit drinking. I'll quit this too. I had a sorry ass sponsor in AA. It took him 10 years to get his first year of sobriety. You know, I was like, well, you're a nice guy, Franny. Come on. Let's go to the dog track. Come on. So that's in 1991. 15 years later, on August the 3rd, about 3.5 years ago, it's my sobriety date. You know, and I found out what it was he was talking about. And the recovery, it's like I want to claim and reclaim myself. I need, there are parts of myself that just, you know, they're not being used. The parts of myself that say, honey, I need this. Or the parts of myself to say to my boss, I have to order this anyway, even though you're complaining about finances or whatever, you know, whatever. I need to get those pieces of myself back. And that's recovery. And it's like the saying that life is what happens when you make other plans. Because when I was working these steps, you know, dink a 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 dink, I'm doing the steps. And I know, because I had my ass burned, I had the torch on my butt, and whatever my sponsor said, I was like, sir, yes, sir. You know, my ass is on fire. I'll do it. Can I do it tomorrow? You know? And so I was doing these steps. And I mean, people talk about the light of God. You know, can you make light go through a window? Can you do it? All you got to do is pull back the drapes, get out the Windex, and clean it. And the light will come through. The light is already beaming down on you. Now, I had more than drapes. I had boards and bricks, you know. And while I was doing something else, while I was doing the nagging things my sponsor asked me to do, and he, you know, he was no horror story. You know, I've heard of a sponsor say, well, do you do this? Well, do something else because you need to learn how to change. And he didn't do that. He was very merciful. But he, you know, he taught me to do the steps, and I did the steps, and this thing happened while I was doing something else. And I was cleaning up, and that sunlight came through. And it, I'm still astounded. I'm still astounded. And these were just, you know, some of the pieces. These are just some key pieces that helped me, you know, pull back those drapes, you know. You know, when you look at in, like, I don't know, Judeo-Christian, you have, you know, lust, avarice, envy, sloth, blah, 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 blah. Well, they've got lust in there, and they've got, you know, avarice, anger. And if you look in the Tibetan Buddhism, they have three evils. They don't have sin. They have the three evils. There's ignorance, lust, and malice. And goddamned, if my favorite thing in the world isn't in both of them, lust. It's like, what's it doing there? I want to lust. You know? Actually, what I want... It's what I was talking about before, those feelings, the sentiment. You know, you're built for these feelings. I had one at my disposal, burned my emotional house down. So I hope that, you know, what I've shared with you can help get some of that light back in to your life. How many times, you know, that first year in AA, I heard so many things that it took me 15 years to say, you know. And I just can't believe it worked. And I hope that it can work for somebody else. I hope it can work for you. You know, just dab. Get a sponsor and do the steps. You know, I can't tell you how many times I go into a meeting and I hear somebody do the say, do the steps. What step are you on? And then when I started doing the steps, it was like I was a parrot. Do the steps! What step are you on? You know, it's like that parrot. You know, because by dang, while I was doing something else happened. And it'll help you clean up. I still have work to do. You know, I'm on my ninth step, doing amends. I haven't done all 12 yet, and you know, 1991 was a long time ago. You'd think you'd clip through this, but no, I have perseverance. You know, I have fortitude. Yeah. How many times have you been in a meeting and you heard somebody say, I had everything that life would have wanted and it looked good to everybody around me and I was dying on the inside? Wife, car, kid, house, dog, you know, job, all of it, you know. Brains too, I didn't have any subscriptions to any websites, you know, because I'm too cheap. But for $9.99, I got dial-up, and I can get all the free trials I want. And that $9.99 is like crack. It was like crack. I couldn't stay away. And I brought myself, really, it brought me down. It really brought me down when that internet came into the house, you know. It was harrowing. It was emotionally harrowing. And it was astounding because I looked good. You know, I had all my teeth, my house, my car, nothing was being repossessed. I hadn't bounced a check in years. Still. And that light, you know, it was about another 9 months before I really got on and got my sobriety together. So, on that, I hope this is a piece for you that works. If you have any questions afterwards, you know, you can come and talk to me. I don't know what my sponsor's experience was, but he seemed to light up when it was starting to work for me, you know. And I can't say enough about just doing the process. And I'll harp on the specifics of doing it. Like if you mix the bread, add the egg and the milk, stir it, put it in the oven, you get cake every time. Cake. Take a dough, put it in your mouth, an egg, swirl it around, put your head in the oven, no cake. You know. And that was what I was doing. I was like, where's my cake? I got it all here. Burned again. You know. Steps are steps because you're going through a process. And if you want the cake, you know, just do it like this, and by God, you get cake. And I was starving, and now I'm eating cake. You know, it's not too bad, and that's what I want for all y'all. All right, now, let's see. Anything you have heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. Let's stand and close with the Lord's Prayer.
for you.
Of course.
No, no, no. That's okay. Heavenly Father, God. Oh, wait. I started the Serenity Prayer. Pardon me. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
Work it if you work it.
Right.
Nice job.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Carlton?
Yep.
Yeah, from Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carlton. Thanks.
It took me a while to figure some of that stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah. It really did.
Yeah, I had a hard day.
You're so welcome. You are.
Okay.
So.
Thanks, Carlton.
Hey, that was very good.
Thank you.
That really is a way to think about it, huh? That, forgive my anger.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never even given that a thought.
Hi, it's Anders. I used to.
And I got anger, baby. Let me tell you. I know it. I got it.
I haven't been around for
a while. Being angry at me for not being capable of saying what I want to say.
Yeah, that's like a.